So here we are, and the system is broke. American dream has gone up in smoke. So stop sitting there all brokenhearted. Let's get this motherfucking party started. Lady Liberty is ringing a bell, and we're driving us straight into hell. But don't worry, we got what you need. Crank up the volume till your eardrums bleed. Go and make America, America again.
No, thanks for coming on, Kenzie. Do you want me to call you Kenzie, Mackenzie?
Yep.
I'm assuming Kenzie because you're...
Yeah.
All right. Just drop the muh.
Because there's no like a... People don't know that. There's no A. And when it's just call MC? Me Mac, I'm like, I lose it. So that's literally almost why I changed my name to Kenzie.
Oh, yeah. You know what is like such a weird thing about people taking... I get nicknames are a thing, but the arbitrary... gall of people to just assume thing, like I don't fight this because it's just become a thing, but the amount of people who call me Jordy on a daily basis, people
absolutely
who I
not.
Work with,
absolutely not.
Listen, it started
fired.
With like one person who I don't even know who it started with, but it wasn't like a bad thing. It was kind of like a sweet, like, you know, it's one of the people I used to work with. She doesn't work there anymore. She would call me Jordy as like a joke, and I'd laugh because it was a joke, but then it caught on.
Yeah.
And now people call me it, and I'm like, I don't care at this point. It is what it is. No. But like, man, if I were to add a Y to your name, I would make sure that was a thing that you wanted before.
That you wanted. So I listened to commentary for F1. That was the race. That's why I had to go
cool.
a little bit later. Sorry. But Jake and his last name, like they add, it's Jake's. And they call him Jakesy, and I'm like, I would be pissed.
Ooh.
So same thing.
Jakesy boy.
Right, like, ugh.
Driving a multi-million-dollar race car, going to add a Y to his name. No big deal.
Grown man, yeah.
Yeah, grown you grown-ass man. I'm adding an I-E to your name, or however you spell Jakesy. That's
terrible.
Rough.
Yep.
But you know what? Like, at that point, you're making millions of dollars. Like, you can call me whatever you want.
Flying all over the world, yeah. It's rough.
Yeah. F1's one of those things that like I watched the Netflix series.
Mm-hmm. Drive to Survive. Yeah.
Yes. I watched like two seasons of it and it was awesome. I kind of just like fell out of it. It's like I do with most things that I watch because I get caught up with other things. But F1 is like, you know, we've got NASCAR here in the US, obviously. We have F1 too. But like NASCAR is like the US racing.
Yeah.
And then you go to F1. I do too. I just, it's all left turns. Like, I get why people enjoy it, you know, in the same way that, like, people, I don't know, like drag racing or, you know, it's a niche thing, but I don't know. I rode motorcycles for years. Like, I loved MotoGP. To me, the more technical the racing, the more entertaining it is.
Yep.
I love watch. You ever watch sidecar racing?
No, I need to, but yeah. Anything
oh
like
my God.
Fun.
they do like superbike sidecar racing where it's dudes in like full track suits and the sidecars are doing 180 miles an hour. And then they do dirt bike sidecar racing where it's like the guy on the dirt bike sidecar is like, they're jumping, they're going over jumps. And it looks like a wild ride. It looks like a lot of fun. How long do you have? How long do you want to have this go for?
I have all day.
Seven hours. I won't keep you all day. I welcome everyone to the A Better Way to a podcast. We're here with Kenzie Fitzpatrick for a 7-hour podcast episode. Buckle up.
You know, it's funny if there's people that would listen to that.
We can just do like an ASMR one. You've got plenty of guns behind you and just like load and unload the guns for 7 hours straight. It'd probably be the most popular episode.
I was about to say, I have some nice ones, some colored ones. I was like looking around my room. I have dinosaur looking things. Yeah.
Dinosaur looking things.
Well, hold on. Can I reach?
You can't say something like that and not show it.
No, like, and the suppressor's on the bench.
Oh,
but...
damn. Okay.
Correct.
Yeah. That.
Correct.
What the fuck is that? Is that a fifth?
It's a
what
Rossi. It's actually a Rossi 3030, but what
That's
it's all
30,
Midwest 30. Industries parts. Yeah. And then. The Thunderbeast suppressor, I use that for PRS too, so I'm pointing at it. But it goes on here, and it makes this whole gun sound like a .22. So when my brother came in town, we were shooting this with, no hearing protection, you don't need it. and our jaws were like on the floor. So there should be an article out soon with gunsandammo.com that I did on this, because it's wildly cool.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. Like you said dinosaur thing, I'm thinking, okay, she's going to bring out some like skeletonized, anodized AR, and I'm going to have to pretend to like it. And like, no, that's something that's like if the protagonist hunter in Jurassic Park had a gun, that's uh-huh. the gun that I feel like you'd have.
100%. So yeah, anyways.
Hell yeah. So Kenzie, I found you recently on Instagram. One of our friends, Yeezy Prince, recommended you to us.
Yeezy Prince.
Yeah, he 3D prints guns. He wears a mask.
Okay.
And he was like, hey, you guys should have Kenzie on. She seems really cool. And I looked at your profile and I was like, she does, in fact, seem really cool. So thanks cool. for coming on. Relatively unknown. You know, we've never interacted before except for in the DMs asking you to come on our podcast.
I love it.
But for those who don't know what you do, where you come from, could you give us a rundown of how you got here, what you do, and, you know, what makes you you?
Yeah, so how I got here is a nonlinear path and not a planned path and an accidental path, I'll tell you that. I grew up around firearms, so I will say I'm blessed in that regard. But my experience with guns was more on the shotgun side. I grew up duck hunting. So my big thing with my grandpa on my mom's side was we would go to Louisiana. We'd hunt ducks for Christmas. And then on my dad's side, we would shoot like little tiny revolvers at like Coke cans off of a log. Like, no joke, that was Alabama for you. So I grew up with both grandfathers really kind of embedded guns in my life. And my dad's a big collector, and he's kind of the inspiration behind, I feel like, a lot of what I do now. But he went to Florida State. My whole family kind of went there. And so when I went to FSU, I didn't really pursue a lot of firearm stuff. So I wasn't really in it until... one year in my grad degree, I Googled FSU, Florida State, like rifle club, pistol club, what have you. And they actually had a skeet and trap team. And then they had the Rifle Association, which is what it was called at the time. I think they renamed it. But they had the student organization group that would meet at Talon Range in Tallahassee. And they would practice. And you could shoot the, it was SAS. So it was like the collegiate. I'm going to say this wrong. See, it's like the...
Scholastic
yes. action shooting sports, whatever. I probably said that wrong. I'm so sorry to that organization. I shot none of it because I was picked for the team. I have this little Browning Buck Mark 22, and then at the last second they're like, we need you to shoot center fire, and if you go center fire you can't go back to rim fire. And I was like, great. Anyways, and then I just started competing. So my accidental love of competition was really from Talon. They had three gun there, which is where I shot my very first three gun in 2017. That was the hook. But then they had cowboy action. And I was accidentally at the range one day when the match was going on, this cowboy action match. And I went over there and like a couple cowboys let me borrow their guns and shoot like a demo stage, you know, a mock stage for fun. And they're like, you should come out. And I was like, I don't have any of my gun, like these guns, right? So along the way, anyways, in my shooting career, I got to borrow a lot of stuff, try a lot of stuff. And then for my master's degree, I studied sports marketing in a way that I thought I would pursue that with other endeavors, but I ended up opening my own marketing firm. So for me, I own a marketing firm in the gun industry and started representing a lot of clients that are in the industry and doing their marketing and social media, which spun off into writing. I love reading. I love writing. My dad's a natural born writer. So then I
that's cool.
accidentally fell into that. I mean, I was at SHOT Show at the range day and someone heard me talking about writing on a smaller scale and then told an editor at a very large publication, which was Athlon Outdoors at the time, that, you know, he should come talk to me. And that is literally what jumpstarted the career with Athlon, with writing for them. Again, all of this is very accidental. So when I look around, I'm very grateful. I'm very blessed. But I had no clue, like, this doesn't seem like a career path that would even be possible for someone. I mean, we're not taught this in schools, right? So anyway, I'm here. That's where I got here from. Kind of weird.
That's awesome. No, that is so cool. You know, that I feel like everybody has all right, I'll speak from experience here. I remember when I was in high school, I never went to college. I ended up joining the service, but when I was in high school, I think everybody has a daydream that the thing they're good at is going to land them like a job. There's going to be, you know, like those Disney movies where there's a scout in the stands and it's like, oh, I need, what's that guy's name over there? And you end up like, you know, making it and whatnot. And for that to actually happen to you, you know, through a series of fortunate events. Mm-hmm. That's something. And you're one of those people that I, you know, from a very superficial level, just looking at your Instagram, I was like, oh, cool. Yeah, we can talk to her about competing. And then to find out that you are like essentially an ambassador for all these different brands. You've written articles, you've written reviews. You're like a Renaissance woman of the firearms world.
It's
just very impressive because one of the things that we talk about a lot with A Better Way 2A is showcasing the different aspects of the gun community that typically aren't really advertised. You know, mm-hmm. I think when most people think of a gun owner, they think of a straight white dude in their 50s or 60s and
open carry, like
whatever else.
For sure. Yeah.
Open carrying for sure. 100% with Uncle Mike's holster.
Yeah. Revolver.
And
yeah, it's better. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Or Galco or whatever. I don't know. Just it continues. But you're the second person in a row who I've had a conversation with on here that is a woman who is extremely accomplished in the firearm space. And I'm starting to think it's not as rare as we've been led to believe. And that's what, you know, there are tons of women in the firearm space, mm-hmm. but I don't think that gets out there that
Correct.
Much. But
I agree.
Is that something that like you, I know your experience plays a lot into this. And on your website, you talk about how like you train couples, but you also like everybody has to train separately because you're not going to be able to rely on your partner for that. But has that anything to do with your experience as a woman in the firearm space or before you were a gun owner? You know, how is that shaped where you are today? I know that's a super loaded question, but like, you know, I don't really know how to even end that question because I feel like I just talked for 15 minutes, but
I think I know where to go with that. So, let's go back. So I'm 33 now. I carried pretty much the day I turned 21. I took my class in Florida and got my permit because again, we're talking about almost over a decade ago. So where I'm going with this is that year, or I want to say the year after that I started carrying, the 43 came out, the Glock 43. And that was kind of like the revolutionary pistol of 9mm, you know, a thin, slim design that really fit women. And at the time there was not really many other options and it was really a kind of a guy's world. There also was like such minimal education from other women, like you're saying, where I never got advice from a woman at all. And I wish that I had. I wish that person had been easy to find. Like, I'm sure that exists. And, you know, and since then, I've met some incredible women, whether they're like more in the hunting space, more in the archery space. I've met incredible fisher women, whatever you want to call them. But like it changed, I would say, when, you know, Glock and Walther and IWI and SIG and all these companies started making these thin guns for women. And that's also when the clothing changed, the belts changed, the off-body carry. I mean, there is no excuse to carrying now, whether you're a female or not. But, you know, that mentorship of women also, it was kind of led by the firearm manufacturers. If you look at Team Glock, I mean, obviously Shane's the best. He's team captain. But you have, I want to say four women on their team. And they had that before. And they're intentional about being inclusive, but not inclusive to be inclusive, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
They are, I mean, Justine J. Lease with Colt. I mean, they're finding... There are some women that are at the elite level, right? They're the best of the best of the best, and they deserve that, right? Then there's women like me. I'm going to put myself in that category. I'm not the best of the best. I'm a, I would say, mediocre or above average shooter in all these different shooting sports. I'm never going to win a national championship. That's not what I'm here for. But it's like I have the credibility of at least knowing how to shoot. So, okay, brands look at that and like, all right, well, she might not be the best, might not be winning all the time, everything, but she's going to go to all these events or bring people into it. And so that's where there's other women like that are incredible ambassadors. I'm looking at now at the Steel Challenge level. There are some gals I watched grow up, you know, when they were 14, now they're 18 and 19. And I'm not that old, but looking at them, I'm like, oh, my God, like they're growing up. You know, one gal and her dad has helped with my women's event actually every single year, Michael and Sasha Danchek. I'm actually a little sad. Sasha won't be there next year because she's going to the military. Like, we want to cry a little bit. I'm really proud of her, right? But like, I've seen her grow up. I've shot with her for years. She's RO'd for my event, like at such a young age. Anyway, so where I'm going with this is now it's becoming more common. And I do think that there's other stuff politically, you know, involved in our country, period, that made us kind of look to like who's not at the table. And the brands that haven't done that, I think are missing out, or the ones that aren't really catering to that market, again, are missing out, because we look at the numbers that I'm sure you've looked them up or seen some of the numbers, you know, when they come out of like, hey, this is how many background checks were women this month or this year. It's like astronomical. And so that's where I also believe like that women learning from women is just a little bit easier or a little bit non-intimidating. It doesn't always have to be like that. So, you know, women can still learn from men. And I have incredible male mentors and instructors that I've learned from. Just sometimes that body difference is helpful.
Of course.
Or how to carry is different. Or just the being able to talk to another woman about firearms that actually does it is a really cool thing, because it is harder to find. I'll say that. So hopefully that answered your long-winded, not really question.
Yeah. Not really question. Just I'm talking until I run out of air kind of thing. No, absolutely. I know, you know, from experience, I've always thought of myself as a decent teacher, but I never really got into, I taught firearms lessons for a little bit, for a few years, but realized that I wasn't really the person for it. Not because I didn't want to do it, but because there were so many people, it's a very saturated space.
It is.
There are so many people that I would recommend above myself, before myself, just because of the experience.
Experience doesn't always translate to a good teacher. I'll say that as well. Like
true.
Just there.
No, absolutely. I just felt like, and I also had a full-time job, so it was hard for me to give everything to the people. But, you know, that's one thing that I always tried to stress to people was that, unfortunately in my area and for the kind of classes that people were looking for, there wasn't a ton available. Yeah. But I always found it almost more difficult to train women because of my own self-perception.
Sure.
And not because of like, I didn't think I was a creep or anything.
Yeah.
But in my head, I would tell myself, don't be that guy. Like, don't be a creep. Don't say something you don't mean to say. Don't, you know, there was those kind of like red flags going off in my head constantly.
Yeah.
Like, make this a safe experience for them. Make them feel welcome. I'm not saying those things, but
yeah,
I think just for women to teach women, and I'm not saying there aren't some guy instructors out there that aren't fantastic to teach women, like you were saying, but I think it's incredible that there are so many women in the space now who have the experience and the ability to teach women, because I just think regardless of how good the guy is, women naturally are going to feel more comfortable being taught from another woman. Just different life lived experience. Like you said, questions about carrying, there's just so many more benefits for a woman to be taught by a woman that could still be there experience-wise from a man, but won't be there because they're never going to be a woman kind of thing.
It's interesting. This morning, can't make this up while we're talking about this, my buddy that's a police officer that I've known forever, he's a fantastic shooter, he's competed, all of that, DM me because he's like, hey, I really need you to teach my daughter because she's going off to college, she's 18, and it's like, wait, she's been raised around a police officer her whole life who knows how to shoot, who competes, who carries every day, who has a million firearms in the house. But at the end of the day, he's like, I'm not the one to teach her. I'm not the one or to take her to that next level or to understand what she needs, right? And so that is like how we help our community, is like him coming to me. There's no ego too. Like, that's really cool. Like with him, he's like, I know that I know this and I could teach her. But that family dynamic, that father-daughter sometimes can be different, couple spouses, that is the thing where, hey, if you're coming to my class, like, you know, I'd love for you to train together and figure that out and how to communicate. But most couples, I mean, women really want to perform for their men, even when they've never trained or they've never shot and they want to do well, or they just don't like them watching. I mean, they're trying to learn something that's so new, but with that pressure that they put on themselves, not that the guys are even doing that. It's just a whole interesting, I almost should have, if I was in college again or like doing a thesis, this would be my study actually.
Yeah.
Figuring out this dynamic thing.
Yeah, no, it's super interesting. Like I know that when I'm doing something in front of my, like, it goes both ways. I want to look good for my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I know she wants to look good for me. And it's very vulnerable to be in a position where you are not looking your best in front of the person who you're supposed to, you in your mind want to impress all the time. And, you know, obviously if you're comfortable, then you shouldn't have to worry about that. But things are easier said than done.
I get that.
I wanted to go back to your college competition days, because was there anything competing in college, because there are people that listen to this who are younger and are probably looking to do the same. Was there anything about competing in college that got you ready for competing as an adult in more, I don't want to say professional competition styles, but like, what are the biggest differences there between the collegiate level and after the fact.
Yeah.
Other than getting paid.
Yeah. So I started, you know, I was 21, 22, like I was in grad school. And so I was still eligible. So I will speak to a couple things in the 20s that's different. First of all, we were mentored by like every student organization had a professor that had to sponsor us, right? Or had to oversee us or be responsible for us kids. But it was really cool because this is going to depend on the student organization, the funding, how much you can raise, all sorts of stuff. But Midway USA, this kind of cool at the time, would match like whatever you could raise. Like there was a program where they would match that funding, which was really cool, and support us. Beretta sponsored us at the time. It's just stuff where when you're younger, it sounds bad to say this maybe somewhat, but you are so like such a small niche market that these manufacturers and companies are wanting to help from a young age because that's great exposure for them. But even the ones that have shot as a junior shooter, I would say, and graduated or whatever, become, you know, 18 and up, they stick with those same sponsors that support them in their youth or what have you. So, you know, when you're young, it's very hard to say this too. And for anyone to listen, because again, you're young, but if you're in college or even, you know, thinking about going to college and want to shoot, you now have to think about how much stuff you put on social media, what you put on social media, how you represent yourself, because you're already going to have a spotlight on you. So what you say matters and it's going to come back way later, right? So you have to think 10 years down the road. But for that, I would find as many mentors, coaches that you can possibly have, because that is when you're most impressionable. But you want to find obviously really good instructors, people who compete, people that should be teaching. But your learning curve as a kid or as a young adult would be so much faster if you just took like a JJ class, Salt, Christian class, whatever, Travis Tomasi, Mason Lane, all of these great instructors. You would be exponentially better than you could be, like with I did, waited 10 years and then finally figured it out. But, you know, that was kind of interesting. But here's the thing with the 20s too. Okay. And here's what people don't see that I have done and I did for years. I had no money, again, in college, graduated college at that point, and I still continued and wanted to continue to shoot. But I got my first full-time big girl job, right? And I still did that for 2 years in Tallahassee. But you aren't going to have money to compete. So here's what I recommend, and this is where the learning comes in too. Go be a range officer and volunteer for as many shooting sports as possible or whatever you're interested in, or different levels of matches. Obviously, there's local, there's your state, area matches, sectional matches, and then, of course, nationals. I volunteered. So at the time, I didn't have a lot of money, but I volunteered. That's a big spider, bro.
I'm sorry. Can you see that? Wow. Yes.
That's a huge spider. No.
Sorry. I'm so sorry.
No, I hope you keep this in there. Hey, guys, if you're watching the video, you need to go watch the video. This thing is massive.
What is going on? Why has this happened to me?
The funny thing is, like, my basement is covered in spiders. So this
dude, I'm just trying to have a fucking episode. Like, what is this? Right in the middle of my face, too. That was, I'm so sorry. I couldn't.
You're fine. Oh, I literally have hundreds of spiders. I sucked them all up the other day.
I put them in a box. All right. I am so sorry.
No, you're good. I'll just, I'll go back to the ROing. Yeah. So the fastest way to learn and to get good at any shooting sport and kind of understand the rules, the regulations, the game, and all of this is to go be a range officer. If you can volunteer your time, whether it's, you know, certain sports or certain level of matches, because there's areas, sectionals, national events, whatever, you can learn faster about the divisions, the rules, the requirements, how people build stages, where those stages come from. Then you start learning what are the commands for making ready and shooting. How does the scoring work? And then how does arbitration work? How does the point system work? What is the points per time and blah, 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 right? So for me, I RO'd, I mean, an ass ton of matches. It was so many that I was glad because they pay for your match. You don't do as well normally as an RO because you have shorter time to shoot the match. But you shoot it and then you work it. And then you also can be eligible for some RO prizes, which is great, but they pay for sometimes your food, your hotel, your travel. It just kind of depends, but it made affordable. Thank you. But it made it where too, like, again, I understood the scoring. I understood how the rotations work and the squatting and just all of the stuff that I had questions about. I worked matches even from the very, very get-go with Glock. I worked those GSF matches for 7 freaking years. Even when I didn't live in Tallahassee, I came back because I was the only one that could run the book. But anyways, it's just stuff like that where if you're young and you want to get into it, do that, because you'll start meeting people. Like, I remember I met people at the time. It was, STI. I met people at Federal. I met obviously Brian with Hunters HD Gold. I met all of these clients I have now, or big manufacturers and people that I have connections with that are still in the industry. Now they're at a different brand, but I met them because I showed up to these matches that they're tabling at. So you get to meet guys, VPs, CEOs, director of marketing. I mean, that was the cool thing too, because, okay, now I can use this as a way into the industry on the other side. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's such good advice for people, even out of college, because I've had this conversation with people so many times who say, you know, I want to get into shooting, but I don't have a ton of money. And every competitor I don't want to say serious competitor, but like every competitor who competes very often on here, as soon as they tell us their round count, I think for a lot of people,
check out,
it instantly goes to dollar signs. And yeah. Like, oh my God, there's no way I can do that. And I think if you're going to compete, you know, of course you don't have to go and compete at that level straight off the bat. Nobody's expecting anybody to do that.
Yeah.
But if you're going to compete, making your competitions, making the times that you compete significantly better, because you're understanding, you know, you're minimizing your oops days and yep. your throwaways because of making silly mistakes. And by spending all that time around as ROing, I'm sure that you get to avoid some of those silly mistakes early on because you've got so much repetition under your belt already.
Yeah. And then talk about watching the greatest of the greatest shooters. I mean, obviously you have to watch for other things too, because you're range offspring, but you get to see, again, some of the best shooters in the world shoot. And so you get to see their footwork and their stage plan and all of that. And that's really cool. I'm telling you, that probably made more impression on me that I didn't even realize until later on, right? Like, I was like, not sure. I didn't know what I was watching at the time or seeing. And then later I was like, oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I'm sure even when you're ROing, it's not like you're doing every match all the time. There's probably multiple ROs there and you get to take a break and watch people.
Yeah.
That's cool. Is there anybody that you think has made the biggest impact on you?
Yeah. I don't know that you would know him. So his name is Scott Noonan and he's the Hunan on Instagram. But so he's been my mentor and now best friend and like older brother since day one. And it's stuff where, so he's in Pensacola or near there, and he's Fort Walton Beach, but I'm in Pensacola. And I met him pretty early on where he can do anything. He's 3D printing like shotgun magazine clip stuff now that fits ELS. I mean, he's brilliant, but he's the one that taught me like what to buy or what to wear or the ELS system for 3-gun, how to work on firearms. I mean, it's like I've never had a fear of doing some of the stuff that I, you know, probably should take to a gunsmith or whatever, or someone that knows what they're doing, because I knew I had him to be like, all right, I got to call him. You know, why is this not working? So along the entire way, he's explained a lot of the long range stuff to me. Like, I sucked at long range, but he has Altus down in Baker, Florida, which is one of the best long range facilities in the country, period. And that's his home range. And I used to go there, and that was really cool, and used to compete at that range. But, you know, having him help me through all of the questions I had, and he was probably the first person that taught me buy once, cry once I got serious. And I live and die by that, and I do recommend it, because it saved me so much heartache and time, just getting what I needed. And then that gear works forever. And I still run said same gear, said same scope for 10 years. Like, I'm not changing it. Once you figure out what works and it is the best and it is durable and all of that, great. Instead of buying 10 things that are going to break over your decade of time. So anyways, that's the shout out to him. But that's for sure, like the smaller people or people that aren't maybe as famous or well-known, the ones that actually are picking up the phone, texting, calling, are there to answer, are the ones that are most helpful to me. And, you know, if there's other bigger names that would do that for you, then I think that's pretty incredible. But the time is the hardest part, I think, with some of those people.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure. Oh yeah. That, you know, man, I wish somebody told me buy once, cry once in the beginning. And I was the first person in my friend group to buy a gun. So I was like, I went through a lot of the growing pains on my own. And then my friends who started buying guns after me kind of did the same thing, because none of us really knew what we were doing.
Sure.
So it was just that I've got so many holsters. I've got so many like Kydex and leather holsters.
I have a drawer.
Yeah, I know. I've got like under the arm holsters that like I thought were going to be so cool. Like, this is going to be it. I'm never going to have to buy another holster again. And like, I laugh at it when I see it. I'm like, I would happily give this to someone right now. But we get people happily give it to somebody who knew that they wanted that specific holster, not somebody who was looking to carry practically.
Right.
And, you know, like I get it for different people. Like one of the things that I hear from, especially like bigger guys, is like, if I have to carry with a coat on, I can't appendix carry and it's hard to carry on my side. So I carry under my arm because it's more concealable. And I know one specific guy who says that to me, and that's like his go-to.
But they make the cool tuckable holster clips now that go under the belt, but they're still external. You know what I'm talking about? That's kind of like for church carry people. But if you tuck in your shirt, for example, your holster clip is still going to go like
outside. Oh, is it the one that you pull out? No.
I don't know. I'll have to maybe find a link for you. But the clips will, instead of like clipping over the belt, they're still under. They're under the belt, whatever. But then they have these like hooks underneath. So they're you just can't see it as much. Like there's just the little 22 hooks that are showing just in general. But yeah, like what you're saying is like outfits and design of holsters.
We get asked all the time, you know, the amount of people who ask me, would you recommend a PSA AR for my first AR? Like that's a very generic question that I get. And I say, well, why are you buying it? Why are you buying it? And 99% of the time I'll tell people, instead of buying that, if you can wait a little longer, which I hope you can.
Yeah.
Like, unless it's personally, if it's like you need a gun right now, I probably wouldn't buy a cheap AR over like a equally priced quality handgun.
Yeah.
But 99% of the time I say, if you can wait, save your money, buy something a little bit better. Because like you said, it's just the quality control is so much better. And in something like a Daniel Defense or like a BCM.
That was my first rifle. I can't believe you just said that. And I bought it used.
Nice.
The TV7. I don't want to interrupt you, but I do want to go on that path really quick.
Do it.
Is don't be shy of buying used stuff, because 99% of gun owners don't actually use their used stuff, right? So for me, I mean, I bought so many guns off of Cowboys that shot Cowboy Action that was their backup guns or their backup to their backup that just sat in the safe. And I was like, this makes sense because they're already worked over, or, you know, they're trusted by someone that, you know, knows their stuff. Or again, the DDV7, again, $1,000 cash. And I was like, I'll take it, you know? So it's stuff where I wish someone had told me, to be honest, about like guns.com, gunbroker.com, because unfortunately, fortunately, whatever, like FFLs make more money with used guns because they'll buy them at 200, sell them at 500, whatever, versus, I don't know if people know this, but new guns, they may maybe make $40 to $50 on, because that's their margins. But anyways, don't be shy to ask people if they have used guns or stuff they're not using, or if they know of somebody, because chances are, I mean, right now I know someone that's selling a Nighthawk, and I don't really know them, but I know them from Instagram, and they know that I shoot for them. And I was like, great, I'll keep that in mind. But it's stuff where it's like, those guns exist, and I bought a lot of them, to be honest, myself. Yeah.
Well, if you buy it, like, it's like buying a Toyota or a Honda secondhand from somebody. Yeah. If it's been maintained, and especially if it hasn't been shot a lot, like, you know that it was a quality gun coming out of the box. Mm-hmm. And if the guy's got 5,000 rounds through it, if that, which most, your average gun owner does not.
No.
then, you know, it could be a gun that was like a safe queen that was like, well, you know, I never really shot it, so I wanted to get rid of it and get something else.
Yep.
Then that's a steal.
Yeah. Huge. Yeah.
And a lot of times they come, you know, preset with optics and all that fun stuff. And if they're quality optics and they work for you, then that's a whole other can of worms that like, nobody told me when I first bought my rifle that like you could expect to pay
the same in
the
an
same for your optic as you did for your rifle.
I say that in articles, by the way. So you're welcome. When I write, I'm like, listen, cause I'm like, all right, you got great ammo, you got a great gun, but then you put cheap glass. And then I was like, okay, you got really nice glass, really good ammo, cheap gun.
God, it's obnoxious. And like, granted, you don't have to, you know, like, I've experimented with a couple different things, but what I've found is that for me, the happy point to where I get everything that I want, like I'll use the Vortex Razor as an example, like the cheaper one, like $1,300 one.
Sure.
That was probably the best optic I had shot. And honestly, I'm not at a skill level to notice the difference between that and like a Night Force, you know, like
that's expensive.
8 to 24 or whatever, you know. Yeah. I'm not at a skill level to notice that. And that's typically what I tell people. Like if you've got a quality gun and you're not sure if you want red dot or an LPVO. There are tons of options out there to get into it. Like yeah. My first LPVO for my AR was the Vortex Strike Eagle. And right. I thought it was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've shot with it a bunch of times and I love it. And then I got a chance to shoot with the Razor, the 1-6. And I was like, wow, okay. thanks for putting this in my fucking head. It's like, I tell people, I used to ride choppers for years and I loved it. Like I just sold it last year and I'm super sad, but I didn't ride it a lot. Anyway, I got used to it for like 5-6 years. I was riding nothing but a hardtail. And then I got on my buddy's Street Glide, which is a very comfortable Harley with like a soft seat suspension. And it feels like a couch. And I was like, I fucking hate you for putting me on this. Like, because now I know what I'm missing.
Yep.
And it's granted, it's apples and oranges. But with optics, like, they're more expensive for a reason.
100%. Yeah. And I mean, it's tough when you're getting started to know what you're looking at or to know what to look for or the questions to ask. And so, I mean, honestly, doing research, watching videos, whether it's YouTube or reading articles will help. But I stuck my face behind so many pieces of glass, like from friends, because I'm like, I don't understand this reticle, or I don't know what that means, or this doesn't work for me, or whatever. And so, like, if you have the opportunity, and again, that is really hard and really rare, but if you have the opportunity, like when people come into my house, I whip out a million firearms. I'm like, all right, and what are you most interested in? Or like, okay, you need carry options. My friend Sarah came over. I'm like, great, you're shooting 5 of these carry guns. We're gonna start with non-comp, then we're gonna go compensate, then we're gonna go, you know, what's gonna fit in your pants, whatever.
Damn.
But it's stuff like that where, do you want optic? Do you want red dot? Not that that matters in the carry gun, but in the space in general, is like, I think I have like 12 different manufacturers of red dot optics at my house. And I love it because I can attest to what works for different firearms or platforms or whatever. And people are like, oh, I understand now. So yeah, demoing is really helpful. If you can put, anytime someone offers you to let you shoot something, just say yes. Don't ask questions. Just say yes.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Figure it out whether you like it or not later.
Yeah. Yeah, just say yes. Take as many opportunities as you can. I mean, for sure. That's my biggest advice to tell people. And it blows my mind when people are like, no, I'm good. Or are you sure? Like, yes. The answer is yes. Go shoot it. Because you're going to learn something new.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like trying food or drinks. Like if somebody offers you a bite of food, unless you're allergic to it, obviously don't do that. But say if it's something you've never tried before, especially like ethnic food.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I have gone down this road so many times where something seems unappealing to me. Mm-hmm. But the first time I tried curry chicken, I remember vividly because it was in an Indian restaurant and my buddy Sham, who I was friends with, brought me to this Indian restaurant because his parents were never home and he's like, I want you to have Indian food. I was like, okay. So he brought me there and he's like, I'm gonna give you the staples, and I remember curry chicken because it was like, he's like, this is the whitest Indian food that you could eat.
Yeah.
And he started me out with it and I was like, it just sounds weird to me. And I tried it and it's anybody who's had curry chicken knows that's delicious, but
yeah
deceivingly spicy if unless it's just from that place. But I want to talk about self-defense stuff because I feel like we could talk about competition. I want to talk to you about cowboy action shooting because that stuff blows my mind, but we'll come back to that, I promise. Okay. There's like a lot of the conversation that we have surrounding this is around people's first carry gun because of the state of things in the country, fears that people have. We talk to a lot of marginalized people in this space, a lot of women, people of color, trans people, people from the queer community. And they're like, I don't like the way things are going right now. And I never held a gun before. I've never shot a gun before. What do I buy?
Yep.
And for a lot of them, budget is an option, but we usually go down the same conversation that I said, like, if you could wait, then wait. Yeah. But one of the things that I saw on your website that you specify with people is that there are no safe spaces. Like if you are planning on buying a gun, you should carry the gun.
Yep.
And that's something that I think really hits home for a lot of people and is also hard to grasp for a lot of other people.
Yeah.
How do you get new shooters to be comfortable carrying their first gun?
Yeah, I think that's a difficult thing. So to start, actually, this was a compliment that I got this year. I was really, really excited to hear. To start is dry fire. And for my Gals at the Range event, actually, a manufacturer came up to me and, you know, they do hundreds of events out of the year. And they're like, this is the only event that we table at. And this is like the last decade of time, 20 years, whatever. Yours is the only event that we dry fire at. The only one. And so the very first thing I start with, and that's a testament to this too, is dry fire. It doesn't matter if it's 22s. I know that you're not supposed to dry fire the 22s, but I put like a little zip tie in there, whatever. But in general, like pistols, rifles, shotguns, it doesn't matter the gun. If you can give someone like 30 minutes of dry fire practice, so it's grip, it's stance, it's trigger pull, it's seeing that optic, it's all of that, bringing the gun up, that's where I start. And it's interesting because where I share that is gals at the range. It doesn't matter if I have people that have shot hundreds, thousands of rounds or people that are new, they dry fire. And by the end of the day, guys, they're shooting machine guns, shotgun machine guns, or shooting Tannerite and explosives. And so that's a testament too of like they started their day scared shitless, to be honest. Or some of them, there's three that came this year, had never even seen a firearm. Like, that's so cool to me. And by the end of the day, they're not afraid and they're having fun, right? Okay, so That's the first thing is I say dry fire. The next thing is getting them comfortable with their own firearm. And here's where I do not baby them. This is what I recommend everyone listen to. Meaning, if you have to show them something once, whether it's unloading, loading, clearing a malfunction, specific one, whatever, fine. But after that, you don't baby them. Because again, you are not going to be there all the time, every second of every day of their life for the rest of their life. So I had actually had a new shooter over at my house last weekend, and she shot a little bit before. We were training her for NRL 22, but I pulled out all the pistols and I taught her the tap, the rack, all that cool stuff. But I explained why the ejection port should be on the right if you're just going to try to like pull back the slide fast, clear the malfunction, get back in the game. And she did. Then when they were more difficult, I'm like, you got to rip that magazine out now, you got to clear the chamber, and how to lock it back. I mean, I know strength is an issue for a lot of at least women that I've seen, like having to be able to pull the slide back is really difficult. But to get comfortable with their firearm, truly, they have to get comfortable with repetitiously unloading it, loading it, clearing malfunctions. That way, if I walked away, they are not scared because they don't know how to do something. The fear comes from not knowing what to do, right? That's my biggest thing is where I start with. And then obviously getting as many rounds downrange that you can get. You know, if you can get them 200 in a day, great. If you can get them 500, even better. But that's my biggest thing to start with is always dry fire and explaining the why. I think the analytical piece, especially for women, is what helps them the most. It does for me at least. It's like, okay, you're telling me to do this. I need to understand why. And then once I understand why, then I'm going to understand it even more. And then I'll understand if something down the road happens, I'll be like, okay, wait, this was that why. Now, like, maybe this is kind of the same scenario. So stuff like that, that I try to make it as non-intimidating as possible. And then I'll just snip it for suppressors. It's like if you can get someone behind any sort of suppressed gun, period, especially as if they're new and they're intimidated, even if it's a pistol, like I have one of those up here, suppressed pistol, that's going to do a lot of help as well.
Oh, so yeah.
Hopefully that helped answer that question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's excellent. It's so funny going into this because even when I started A Better Way 2A, I was very new. I had been carrying at that point for probably 5 years, 5 or 6 years. But I was your average gun owner. I didn't know shit about fuck.
Did you know how to take it apart? Did you know how to disassemble it and clean it?
Okay. Yes, yes.
That's the other thing that people don't, they need to know. Can you go blind? Yeah.
Yeah, I probably could. Yeah. I mean, I was always mechanically savvy and stuff. And like, you know, I was familiar with firearms for my experience in the Marines, but I really wasn't like a gun guy.
Yeah.
And that's another thing, like I tell people all the time, is like, if your instructor's only qualification is the fact that they were in the military, find a new instructor, because nine times out of 10, that is not a good, they might be a nice person.
You can say that. I can't say that, but I do share that.
You can say that. Absolutely.
I mean, we do.
But I give you permission for every person in the military ever. And anybody who disagrees with you is wrong.
That's true. Or it's like, if their qualifications is I was law enforcement, I was military. It's like, great. So you probably shot maybe 50 rounds a year if you're lucky. And then maybe you're issued like a pistol, but never shot rifle or shotgun in your life. Or again, that's where it goes back to, like, are they actually taking their skills elsewhere? Because the law enforcement, the military folks that are going out and competing and testing their carry gun or their weapons that they have to carry on duty, I think it's so freaking awesome because, again, that's going to save their life one day. Like, I can't imagine being a law enforcement officer that gets 50 rounds in one training qualification a year and be like, you're good. Like, what?
No. But think about it, like, from the perspective of even a citizen, you know, if you get a gun and you are planning on using that, you're not planning on it, but worst case scenario, that is supposed to protect you and save your life. You should train like it, regardless of whether or not you think it's going to happen. And, 100%. You know, that's like, it's funny. I don't do much stuff with like, you know, vet status or with the Marine Corps anymore. I still go to the Marine Corps birthday. I'm going this year because it's the 250th anniversary. We're going to Philly.
Huge. Get drunk.
I'm going to get so drunk. It was like $60 for all you can drink a couple years ago when we went. It was beers, and it was the lightest beer I've ever had. But I bet they know. But the Marine Corps Scout Sniper team, competition shooting team, just started following the page, and cool. I saw it and I screenshotted it. I showed it to my like group chat, and I was like, guys, look at this, like, this is sick. Yeah, I don't know, just fangirling a little bit there.
No, that's awesome. But, congrats. Yeah,
I didn't do it. I mean,
you did in some way. In some way. It wouldn't exist without some sort of persistence.
I guess not. Yeah, exactly. I don't know where I was going to go after that, but that is.
I interrupted your military training. Sorry, the instructor and all that. Yeah.
I don't know. Probably wasn't important.
No, it wasn't.
If I can't remember it, it was. Listen, I'm listening to you. I'm like taking notes and stuff. I'm having a good time. We're here. We're here for you. We don't need to listen to my stories.
That's not true.
There is a, you know, I keep looking back at this wall behind you, and I hate to ask this question because it's so cheesy, but do you have a favorite?
Yeah. So my dream gun finally got built this year. So I mean, everybody probably knows this gun. It's iconic, but this is the Nighthawk Sandhawk. It is a double stack 9. It is compensated. So actually, I'll just show you. Lock this bad boy back. Shot this the other day. So beautiful compensator. It has three different colors of Cerakote and anodization. So it is something else. But this, they changed their, or they added an option to do an aggressive texture, let's say about 2 years ago. So this has that on there. I added the magwell. They did a custom trigger job because I'm on the team. So I'm spoiled. And same with, there's no grip safety because I'm spoiled and I'm on the team and they get to build my gun the way I want it. But you know, this was something that I didn't know that Nighthawk existed, right, until I really got into competing. Like, obviously, Smith and Glock and HK and all these brands, which is great, people know about. But when you start getting into the custom manufacturers of 2011s, you would have to be in the space for a minute or really, really know it or seek it out. But this is the finest manufacturer of guns in the world. And one gunsmith, that's what blows my mind. One gunsmith is what's making their guns. So from start to finish, there are still great 2011 manufacturers where they have a couple people working on it. And I still think that's fantastic, but it's really rare to find one person these days because everything's assembly line or mass quantities. Mm-hmm. It still doesn't seem real to me. It's a dream come true. Believe it or not too, I've loaned this gun out already more times than I've even gotten to shoot it myself. And so,
oh really?
Yeah.
But isn't that like the truth about anything that you love is like you want other people to love it as much as you do?
Yeah. And that's where people know that I'm a demo shop, essentially, like my alien right now, my Creator Evolution alien. That's pretty expensive. Is out with a friend. I'm like, yeah, just take it. Have fun. I'll see it at some point. And like,
hell yeah. It's all good. Do you ship to Connecticut?
Yeah. Right. That's a reality though. So yeah, that was cool.
I would have said no to that question, even if you did, just because nobody wants to ship to Connecticut, unfortunately.
No. Yeah.
We talk about it all the time about like there's, so we're here because our family's here, you know, and that's like, my wife is very family oriented.
Yeah.
I'm slightly less, but like if she were like, hey, let's move to XYZ state, I'd be like, okay, how long do I have to find another job? You know, like. Although I will say, like, I'm a firefighter full time here. There's no other place other than the Northeast where that like pays as well as a firefighter. 90% of the country is volunteer.
Right.
But that's like the one thing that has made
Arkansas is not volunteer, is it?
Well, there's probably places in like most states, they probably have some paid municipal departments like cities and stuff. And then, but the majority of rural towns are volunteer.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And the majority of the country is rural.
I work for a national park.
That would be so cool.
Smoky Mountains in my backyard. You need to come interview.
Oh my God. I feel like that would be sick. Dude, I never thought of like the park service being the based government department that they are. Like they're,
it might not be your exact job, but you'd still get to do shit outdoors and
Yeah, I had a friend of mine trying to apply to be a park ranger. She ended up, she works at a rehab, which is still really cool and fulfilling, I'm sure, but abrupt change of career path there.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Park rangers are cool. Got to go visit our national parks.
They get to get closer to bears and elks than any of us. No, I wouldn't want to deal with some of the stuff that they have to deal with, but
there's no way. But you know what? Like, there's got to be part of that that is funny. Not that I'm saying I wish anybody to get hurt, but I see these videos and pictures of tourists getting tossed by like buffalo and elk.
Not so much.
Oh my God. Which one? It happens all the time.
The buffalo one that I recently saw was pretty brutal. I think that person died though. So it's not.
Oh no.
Good.
Oh, yeah, but like how many, I don't know. If I'm going to a national park and I'm like, there's going to be buffalo there. I'm so excited. I've never seen a buffalo. I would probably Google at least the word buffalo at some point in my life before I go there. And I don't know how far down you have to scroll, but it's probably not very far, especially if you Google buffalo and then the national park you're going to.
Yellowstone, yeah.
Before somebody's getting flipped up in the air, and maybe give yourself an idea that you shouldn't do that.
We're off on a tangent, but I saw this live.
Fine.
I didn't have time to video it, but I was at Yellowstone and I was walking this like boardwalk type path, which was really cool. And they had obviously like the thermals, but there was a elk mom that was like right near us and her baby was bedded down and people could kind of see the baby, but these stupid foreign people, okay, kept getting closer and closer and closer and then wanted to step off the path. And the elk mom charged them. So funny, though. She charged so hardcore that this foreign person had to jump over the railing into the thermal sink area. I mean, didn't slide in, right? They were fine.
Good.
But it was like lesson of like, well, her kid is right there. Like, you have to understand the ecosystem too. It's not always about you getting close to them. It's the threat that you pose to the, anyways, it was wild to watch.
No.
I'm just like, what?
For the record, we go off on tangents
a lot.
All the time,
yeah.
Right,
I just
show,
I should have
so
put
it's
a
not...
head camera on like for my entire experience of Yellowstone, because that was not the only encounter of like idiots where I was like, what? Like one had their baby out the window to take photos.
Yes.
And then the bison came up and was like charging and she had to like hand it off to the dad and then run around. I was like, what do you think would happen? You're 20
Listen,
yards.
Like,
not okay.
My wife and I are, I would like to say, like, we're very reasonable when it comes to the things that we let our daughter do. I try to get her out of her comfort zone. I let her climb. She's three.
Yeah.
I let her climb a tree the other day. I was right next to her and like underneath her and stuff. But like, I was like, you want to go up to that branch? Sure. Like, I'm going to catch you. If you fall from there, I'm going to catch you. I'm right here.
Yeah.
I was more nervous than she was.
I'm sure.
Seriously. I've never climbed a tree before because I didn't have trees to climb. They're all like oak trees and they don't, there's no branches like at climbing level or whatever. But I was like, this is a core memory. This is a skill. This is like what we have to do to make a strong daughter, like whatever. Like
I used
in
to
my
climb
head,
trees,
wants,
so it's a good thing. It's healthy.
Hell yeah. Hopefully she'll get it. Well, she's definitely going to get into guns at one point.
I did push my brother out of a tree though, because he pissed me off once. That's the only thing. You have siblings.
The only time it's awesome. Well, I mean, hopefully your brother was okay. But
yeah, he still lives in that house actually with the same tree, and now his kids are up there fighting as well. So it's great.
Awesome. Full circle. Awesome. I tried climbing one of the trees in my front yard once, but because the branches were so high, I had to throw a lasso over the branch and I made like a one-to-one pulley system essentially. Nice. Where I was like, okay, I'm going, and because it was on the bark, I was like, there's like a progress capture, I can pull it up, step in the loop, and then I'll do like a hop and pull as I'm doing it.
That's
and
smart.
It'll eventually get me all no it wasn't
so.
It pulled my legs up and I inverted myself and I fell back first onto the root. And I ended up knocking the wind out of myself for the first time in my life. And I'll never forget the sound I made as I was like hobbling into the garage in tears, because it's the funniest. I love listening to people get the wind knocked out of them. It's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life. It's just the, like, it makes me want to cry laughing because I know how horrible it feels and how scared you are because you can't get a breath in, but it's the funniest sound. Like, I could listen to people getting the wind knocked out of themselves all day
on loop.
Yeah, it's the fun. Like the woman who's crushing grapes. Ever seen that video?
No, but we are so far off. No, you're gonna have to send me links after this. No, you're gonna have to send me links.
I'll have to do that. That is, I'll definitely send you a link to that. There's a bunch of people out that are listening to this right now who I'm sure are like, yeah, that video, whatever. It was like peak internet. It came out in like probably 2006.
I was 14.
14. I was 16. I wasn't too much older than you. I had unrestricted internet access.
my thing is, my parents didn't let me have a phone until I was 16. So there's that.
That's smart. That's
I appreciate
smart.
It. I wish more. Yeah, I wish. Yeah. If I could bury my phone, my technology, like tomorrow, and I still could have a job and a career and a life, I would do it. Like, I'd be gone. I'd be so happy. Yep. People yeah. don't know that. And obviously, because like my job is socials, but I'm like, no, I would love it. I'm off grid.
Yeah, for sure.
It's not an option, though.
No, no. And I feel the same way. I wish I could just go on the computer for a couple hours a day, do a Better Way 2A stuff, and then be done.
Peace. Yeah.
Yeah. But unfortunately, that's not how that works.
You're good. All right. Defensive firearms. Let's go back to that.
Yeah. Defensive firearms. I've got. Yeah.
I would love this.
So we were talking about before you before I think we actually started the episode, or we might have been starting the episode, but how you train men and women separately, like if they come as a couple.
Yeah.
Do you find any difference in your style of teaching when you're teaching a man versus a woman, or like, if so, do you like, what do you change?
I think with women, I'm just I'm not slower, but I think I'm more, again, because I know I am one and this is how I learn, I'm more analytical of every single shot for women. I like analyze everything. Okay, what was her trigger pull? What was her grip like? Are they shifting their grip? So I really, really force them to slow down. Whereas I feel like I can't even get the words out sometimes with men, because they'll just like mag dump, be like, I finally have ammo. I'm finally able to shoot. Let me go. And then they just, and I'm like, okay, cool. But like, what did you learn? And what did you process? And what did you see? And then like, I don't know. And I was like, okay, well, we really need to like back up a little bit. And that's not always the case. I'm not saying that to be true. But like, again, I've just had so many one-on-one experiences both ways where it's been awesome recently with the women I teach of like, hang on, pause, finger off the trigger, whatever. And then I'll go over this and then they correct it and then boom, they're back at it. I'm like, great. So I think that has something to do with it. I get shooting is exciting, but like, you know, for men, I'm like sometimes just slowing down because you're forming habits. You know, every 10 shots that you make, those 10 shots just probably buried a new habit in you. And if you are starting from a really poor habit, you know, and trying to fix it, that's very hard to go backwards. So I really like the blank slate sometimes too of newer shooters. I think that's the magical thing right there. But yeah, I think that's the difference, is just the speed and the slow analytical thought process and the why and every shot. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
More tender. There's, I don't know.
Tender?
More tender of like, okay, let me explain why. Because it is very intimidating, especially again, most women that come to me, it's their first time ever. They don't even own a gun. They don't know what they don't know. So for me, it's like every single time I'll start with dry fire, but I'll give them one round and then I'll give them another mag with one round and then we'll get there first. And then maybe they get three. So yeah, there's a difference there where I just go slower. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You know, I see less of it now, but when I first started, I definitely saw more of this, especially I remember my pistol class. There was a husband and wife there, and the husband was there to get his permit and the wife was there to watch. And I remember it being like, well, you're both in the class. Like, why aren't you getting, she's like, well, I'm not going to carry, but I want to learn how to shoot. And I said, well, that's fine. But like, you're here. I never said any of this because I was a student also. Yeah. But I'm like, it sounded like the dynamic in the relationship was like the man protects the woman and the woman is, you know, the helpless damsel in distress kind of thing. And I don't see that as much anymore. I'm sure it still exists. Mm-hmm. But there, I'm so happy to see this. And I know I said this in the beginning, but I'm so happy to see women being empowered by something that is really like, you know, for years I've been saying a gun's an equalizer. It's like it can make a, you know, 120-pound woman or like an elderly person or somebody in a wheelchair, or not, I'm equating the three, but like,
but yeah,
essentially equal to the strength of a 180-pound man intent on doing them harm. And it's not even this, man, what's the word I'm looking for? Like it's almost a common sense thing now that I find amongst the majority of female shooters that I interact with. They're like, of course I know that. Like, why? You don't even have to tell me that. Yeah. It's just like, yeah, why do you think I got a gun, dummy?
Yeah.
And like, there's so much less. Do you know like what a FUD is?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. But like, yeah, we're the same age. I feel like it's a generational term. I feel like there's so much less FUD lore now. There's still a bunch out there. I know there is because I hear it sometimes. But, and especially, oh my God, especially in far left gun spaces.
Yeah.
The amount of people that, like, you know, I don't consider myself a socialist. I'm not a socialist, but I like the SRA, the Socialist Rifle Association,
yep,
because it's getting people into guns who typically would not be into guns, and it's, yep, giving them a community to practice with for the people who would not feel comfortable practicing in, like, yep, a conservative room or whatever.
Right.
And I think that's excellent. And not to mention they do a bunch of community service and stuff like that. But, man, do you go on Reddit at all?
Yeah.
The SRA subreddit, sometimes, like, I have to take a break sometimes, because the amount of people who say, like, oh, just buy an SKS. The SKSs are great. They've been great for so long. You don't need an AR, you know, it's all this. I've got this Makarov that I absolutely love. Like, you've got excuse me. Like, they're one of my favorite pages is Yellow Peril Tactical. And I know there are some people who don't like them because they're like Glock purists.
Okay.
But the amount of people who say, you know, XYZ gun is just as good, just get it. And I only got it for $200, or I only got it for $300. Not saying you can't get a good used gun for $300,
sure, but
comparing a 50-year-old Soviet era handgun to a modern firearm is like, there's just no any modern firearm.
It's pain. It's painful.
Yeah. It's painful. Yeah. And then the people that justify this, like, oh, I just got my first gun. It's a Taurus 6.3 something, and it's got two different cylinders, and I can shoot two different calibers out of it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that shouldn't be your like, if I run out of ammo in this, then I have another one that I could shoot this. That should not be your plan.
Yeah. And the budget stuff is what blows my mind, is like, okay, you have one tool to protect you for the rest of your life, and you're going to go as cheap as possible or whatever budget. And I understand budget is real. I'm not telling you to go out and
for sure,
or carry a $3,000 gun. Like, I have friends that do that, and I think they're dumb, to be honest. My package for concealed carry is typically always under $800, or maybe under $1,000, right, with everything else. But, you know, like, trusting your life to this, I don't know how to put it into comparison, to be honest, is like, it's Spirit Airlines maybe would be like cheaping out. And would you really want to trust your life to that flying cross country?
But, at least it's still get, like,
no,
I know what you're saying, because I've flown Spirit and like
the prop plane.
But like, yes, but at least Spirit, like, Spirit will get you there and you will land. You will not be comfortable, yeah, but it'll get you there, and you'll have to pay extra for everything. I would say, like, would you trust your life equally to a 40-year-old car?
Yeah.
With 40-year-old seatbelts, 40-year-old bumpers, like, or even 30, or even, I mean, 20, even we'll go back 20 years, you know.
There's, some of those I had are for good. Some of them are actually stealing.
Oh, I know. I had a 2002 Volvo S80, and that thing was a fucking tank.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, not all cars are built equal.
Yeah.
Yes. Not all cars are built equal. Not all. And, you know, we'll say 30 years. The 90s were not a good time for cars. You know, there's a 90s Ford Taurus is not going to be the same as a 2020 Ford Taurus.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't know how to get that to people's mind. That's for sure.
You know what it is? Is like what I tell people whenever we're talking to people who disagree with us on something, I tell people you need to provide evidence that you can be a trusted source. Yeah. I think you do a great job. You're very professional. You're very easy to talk to. And thank I feel you. Like people get that when they talk to you.
Thanks.
It's probably why you're a great instructor and why people actually book your classes. But proving that, like, you don't need to go into a conversation and be right immediately, but showing that you can be a trusted source. So then they come back and ask you questions.
Yep.
Or if enough trusted sources tell somebody, no, you're an idiot for doing that gun. Like, hopefully at that point, you're going to be like, well, okay, all my friends are telling me this. Maybe they're right. Or, you know, you'll be more, I'm sure some people keep it out of stubbornness. But anyway, I digress. The SRA, great organization. Not everyone on the subreddit should be listened to for advice. Or any, you know, anyone on any subreddit or on the
very
internet.
Very true. But very true.
Yeah, I've got other questions. I mean, I don't know how long do you
spend it?
You want to keep going?
7 hours.
This is all right. 7 hours. We've got one down. We're going. I've got to lean all the way out here because my camera is in front of the timer on my screen. That's funny. you grew up with your grandparents teaching you how to shoot. You said, right?
And my dad. And my dad.
And your dad. Your grandpa and your dad. Right? Is that who you said?
both grandpas shot and were gun enthusiasts.
Gotcha. But
like growing up in the home, my dad for sure. I mean, obviously he would take us and go hunting with us too. It was just those three men were just, yeah, everything.
Is there anything that, cause I had the blank slate thing going for me. Cause I didn't have a ton of mentors when I was learning how to shoot,
yeah.
But I also didn't have a lot of bad habits built up. Is there anything that you know now that you could look back and think about that your dad or your grandpa, your grandparents taught you that you were like, ooh, this is their version of the Fuddler, or like, no disrespect to them, obviously, but like times change and we learn and stuff like that. Yeah. Is there anything that makes you laugh now that they told you back then?
It's more always like the thumb positioning of, and I've looked at some of my photos too over like Christmas holidays of going home and like leaning back. I mean, again, how do I say this? People that like know how to shoot or that do own firearms don't always know the proper technique or know how to teach others the proper technique. And so it was funny, yeah. Like I showed my dad some pictures of me shooting a revolver and I kind of had a teacup with my left hand just because no one really knew what to do with the thumb and crossing it and all this. Anyways, it is what it is. But you know, he was like, well, I always thought you just like knew. And I was like, how would I just know, you know, without knowing? It's just like this really funny like loop conversation. And we grew up so much more with like shotguns. Like I always had a cheek weld. I've understood shotguns my entire life. Great. Perfect. Patterning, all of that. But it's stuff where the pistol is really the hardest thing to master, period. And then understanding that you can have the same grip on every gun, except for obviously revolver changes up a little bit. But that was something that I don't think I ever really knew until later on. And then got really confident with the grip. But yeah, so like going back, I was like, Dad, I was like leaning back. I like didn't know what to do with this hand. And I like feel like I was afraid of the shot. I don't know. There's just stuff that I like look at some of these photos and like cringe a little bit. But again, they don't know what they don't know. So I don't fault them for that either. And not everyone that I've had someone that has tried to teach me before was a terrible shooter or great shooter, terrible instructor, where they're like, well, stop missing. Well, why are you doing that? Well, you hit the target. I'm like, you're not even like, how like watch me shoot.
Yeah,
and they can't look at it and understand what's happening behind the scenes. And so that's where, I don't know, I do have that talent where I can watch someone shoot. I can immediately identify, oh, it's this or this, yeah, anyways. But yeah, so that's what I'll say is some of that just cringe grips.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's do they watch you now or anyone who's still around? Like they watch you now and like, how do they feel about how far you've come?
So all my grandparents have passed now. But my dad and my uncle is probably like my number one fan, which is really cute. But my dad and my uncle will send That's like awesome. Videos or articles to people that they work with or people that they know. And it's really funny because in my DMs, I had no idea who this person was. I guess he works with my father. And so I just get this DM with all these questions about the IWI Masada and all this stuff. And then when my dad referenced it, I was like, is that who was in my DMs? Like, who are we talking about here? And so it's just kind of funny but it's cool. It is really cool that happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's the weird part too with going home for Christmas or going back to Louisiana for Christmas. This is wild. Okay. Small world. So I go to duck hunt over Christmas holiday. It's right before my grandpa passed. It was like last Christmas there. And I took his shotgun out, but I went to a duck blind with my cousin and then one of their like friends that they shoot with. And he's probably in his 50s. He waited to the very end of the trip, but he was like, by the way, are you like three gun Kenzie? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, oh, my son follows you on YouTube. And so I took his phone. I took a video to his son. Like, it's like, yo, you need to come see with us next time. Wish you were here. Like, just try to leave him with something. But the smaller the world gets, because the family connection stuff or like people sharing that was like really kind of a holy cow moment. Cause I'm not that big. It's just, anyways, I think it's just the communication that people are sharing from my family side is really kind of cool. Yeah.
That is super neat. I always wish that I shared something with my dad as far as like hobbies or, you know, traditions or anything like that. And like, my dad's a great guy, but like we could not be more different in the sense that like I built my daughter a swing set and he wanted to help. He's a sweetheart. His like love language is gifts.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, Dad, we're like, if you want to help pay for some of it, you could do that. I'll say it was from us and you.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I want to help build it too. Like, okay, great. So I'm like talking to him and I'm just watching him as I'm explaining like, all right, Dad, you can build this door. Like the door's here. The instructions are here. You know, like all the nuts and bolts are labeled. Uh-huh. All the screws are labeled. you know, like you have to pre-drill this and the Yeti. And I lost them. Like I already lost them. And I just remember thinking like, all right, well, you know what? Like we can be different. He's great in all these other ways.
Yeah.
This is the, what you, Dad, feel free to just sit, hang out, have a cigar if you want. I'm happy to have your company.
Yeah.
But we talk about guns and stuff sometimes, and he's like, he's funny because he's conservative, but he doesn't, he's like, I don't know why anybody needs AR-15s.
Yeah, interesting.
And I'm like, all right, well, because he's not a gun guy. He's ignorant to guns. And I just kind of laugh and I'm like, well, it's not really about need, Dad. Yeah. It's not like a need thing. It's like, it's a right thing. But, and we'll talk about it, and I'll go down to like a competition. One of the big ones that I go to is Woodland Brutality down in West Virginia. And he's like, oh, were you down there shooting machine guns? And I was like, no, Dad, I'm just shooting my AR and my handgun. He's like, AR, that's like what the military uses, right? And I'm like, every year, every time we talk about my AR, I tell you, no, it looks similar, but it's not the same. Uh-huh. Every time. It's so funny. Like the things... It's not something that he's passionate about. So it's like in one ear and out the other. And it's just kind of part of how
that is. But yeah, you'll never be able to change it. It'll just be a loop.
It is really funny. Like I work 24-hour shifts at work.
Yeah.
And I'll tell him, he'll be like, you at work? And I'll say, yeah. And he goes, well, when do you get out? I'm like, I get out tomorrow, same time I came in, Dad. For the past 8 years, it has not changed.
Bless him.
He's like, all right, yeah. I know. It's hilarious. How do you? So you're on YouTube. You also do podcasting. Obviously, you've got a microphone.
I did. And I'm trying to bring it back. But when you do 121 episodes by yourself and editing and film, and I loved it. I like podcasting is actually one of my favorite things. Talking to people, like it was sad for me to get off a podcast and we'd be like, yeah, we should hang out or talk again or get on a video call, whatever. And it never happened and it's never going to. And it's like, I don't know. I love talking to people, but I did a lot of that. And then I just burnt out, to be honest. I moved houses, to be fair.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I really wanted a co-host or someone to take on some of the responsibilities or just be able to like work with someone else. But yeah, it was a lot. I loved it.
Well, hey, listen, if you ever want to, we have guest co-hosts sometimes.
I'm here for
the show. If we ever have somebody on, what? Yeah, 7 hours. We'll do 7 hours.
I got
we'll
you.
Do eight. We'll do eight. There'll be a captive audience. I'll make sure. Listen, if you're closer to them, you can co-host from their house.
That's
I give
funny.
You permission.
That'd be funny.
Make sure they don't leave.
Okay. No, I'm in.
Eight hours.
Yeah.
We've had a couple people that are coming up that. We got a couple politicians in the shoot who have asked us to like contact them in a week or two. Actually, one I have to reach out to. And we get people from all walks of life, all different like angles and whatnot. Yeah. It's funny because the majority of our listeners are, I would say, like center to left leaning because of the social issues we talk about and whatnot, and how that affects the gun space and the gun community. And I won't say that. It's discouraging when we have conservative people on, but the feedback that we get is interesting because we had a dude on that was like spouting conspiracy theories and stuff. And I just kind of let him run with it because I thought he was joking. And then afterwards when the podcast came out,
you're like,
I was like, oh, he definitely wasn't joking, guys. And people were like, man, kind of disappointed that you let him run with that. And I was like, I didn't know what to say. I thought he was kidding. Like, so that's really the only one of the only, but like we've got an episode coming up where like a buddy of mine who I served with, who he actually works at the police academy. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes. Cause we have a lot of ACAB folks that follow us. Nice. But like, you know, we're in here to talk about the tough stuff and like talk about things that people may not always agree on and show different perspectives. And I love this medium for that. I think it's great because you don't get to have those opportunities with people on the internet much.
Never.
Especially not via text.
And it's not worth it. It's really not worth it.
No. I've gotten to the point now where I just like somebody will disagree with me, but show it's like all emotional. It's no logic and facts. And I'll be like, actually, you're wrong. Hope this helps. But
nice.
That's my way of like saving my mind for people who deserve it kind of thing.
That. Yep.
But yeah, I think this was a great episode. I I had fun. There's still probably, I'm sure, a ton of stuff that we could talk about. We'll have to have you on as a guest host.
I'm in.
We'll have you on with somebody sick. That'd be fun. I'll find out who, if we have any guests coming up, if we have any guests who are competitors.
Okay.
And I'm definitely out of my depth there. I can ask you fairly generic questions, but I guarantee you there's people listening who are like, you didn't even talk to her about this. She does this. And I didn't talk about cowboy action shooting, which I want to do, but we can save that.
Okay.
Because I feel like that's a whole other, we could talk about cowboy action shooting for an episode.
I can pull those guns out for that episode too.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Those are fun.
One more question for you, which we ask everybody, but if you had a piece of advice for people, it could be gun related or not. It could be related to anything. What would that piece of advice be?
So I always have an episode, or all the podcasts have the same kind of thing. So I'm trying to change my answer here.
Is that a thing other podcasts do?
Well, they always have what do you want to leave listeners with? What's a piece of advice? And I try.
Oh man, we're going to have to ask a different question now.
Nah, it's good though. I would say, try to get comfortable in being uncomfortable. And this could be with anything, not even firearms related, but if you're in your comfort zone all the time, you're never going to learn. So again, it applies to firearms as well, but it's something where people always ask me, how do you travel so much? How do you go do XYZ things? How do you just show up to a match by yourself? And I was like, well, I'm really uncomfortable. It is really hard to do that. And it is really challenging. And you know what? And I tell my dad the same thing, I wanted to go hike Yellowstone. I couldn't find someone that could take off for, a week and to go do it. But if I didn't do it, I'm not really living my life. And if I wait to live my life until I have someone to go with me or someone to hold my hand or someone, whatever, it's going to be too late or it's never going to happen. Right. So for me, my piece of advice to you all is go do something uncomfortable, get out of your comfort zone. You're going to grow. You're going to learn. You might have fun and you're going to meet new friends and new buddies. I mean, it is so easy to do that in the world. I promise you, go outside, touch some grass, but that's what I want to leave you with. So I think that's relatable to anything, honestly, in life.
I love that. No, that is so good. I feel like you can use that advice for anything.
Yeah.
Getting better, talking to people who disagree with you, going outside, making friends. Yeah, that's great. I was literally touching grass before this episode. I planted a bunch of what?
I was a little sweaty.
Is it, dude? I'm like just
no. I was oily. Outside I naturally, too.
Oh, okay. It was
and basement.
I planted basement clover everywhere. Yeah, well, dude, you don't need to talk about basements. I'm
spiders.
I'm waiting to get attacked. Do you know what a spider cricket is?
Yeah, I have those too. Actually, in my trap.
You do?
Yeah, they're in this basement is disgusting, and I'm working on it. But I found a snake skin upstairs on my ceiling tiles, which is gross. This is yesterday or 2 days ago. And then a dead mouse and then a real mouse trapped in one of the other ones. And then the cricket spider. No, I have spiders everywhere. And it's like people come down and be like, you've been down here a while. No. Spiders create webs within an hour of me sucking them off with the shot.
Oh my
back.
God. So relatable.
Yeah.
I'm literally looking at a hole
yes.
in my door frame right now. Wait, you said you have a trap for spider crickets?
Yeah. They're sort of sticky mount thingies, but you got to put them in the strategic locations where they're going to kind of come across or land.
Yeah. I need to get those. I would trap so many things in those all, but I'd feel bad when I'd get mice.
No way, dude.
I know.
There's enough of them. They ate my ceiling tiles. When I was taking them down.
Oh, I don't have that many. I had a field mouse that I got stuck. It was this cute. It was, I don't know, call me a baby or whatever. But I saw it was stuck and it wasn't meant. It was meant for the spider crickets and stuff. And my whole thing was if you don't bother me, I won't bother you.
Sure.
So if they live up in the whatever's, that's fine. Just don't start leaving shit places. And then I started finding shit and I was done. We're all done.
Cause, poop. Yeah. Yeah.
It's yeah. Fun. That's rough.
It's fun.
But I found this tiny little field mouse alive and I looked at how to get him out of a sticky trap. And it's oil, an olive oil or vegetable oil.
Jesus.
So I waterboarded this fucking mouse with vegetable oil until he got out of the sticky trap. And then I let him outside. He looked how they say a wet chihuahua or Yorkie mm-hmm. looks like a rat
yeah.
when it's wet. That's what I really got this thing from. Cause he looked like the most pathetic thing I've ever seen.
What a guy, Jordan.
And I was like, go home, go to your friends, and he probably got picked up by a hawk that was happy to have an oiled mouse, but
tasty snack.
You seasoned him for me.
I love it.
Anyway, on that note, thank you, Kenzie, for coming on. This was fun.
It was awesome. Thank you for having me. I'll be back. Yeah, you've already said it. I'll be back.
Yeah. Hell yeah, I'll be back. Yeah, we're going to have you on for a guest episode, a guest host episode.
Hopefully we'll feel better. So shout out to Andrew, too.
Andrew, feel better? Yeah, he's got a family of five. And
it's a lot.
He's the first one to get sick right now, which I just know is going to be a month and a half long
trigger of ordeal. All the ordeal. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, wow, my wife's going to get it next, and then the kids are going to get it, and then somebody's probably going to get it at the tail end again, and yeah, it's...
Yep.
Can't quarantine, but yeah. Anyway, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Thank you again for coming on. This was awesome.
100%.